Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to Becoming is Messy, where we dive deep into the journey of survival, transformation, and everything in between. I'm your host, Megan Dawson, here to share the honest, unfiltered stories behind my own process of becoming. Life isn't a pretty and perfect straight line, and neither is becoming the person we're meant to be. Here, we embrace the ups, the downs, and all the beautiful, chaotic, messy moments that shape who we are. Whether you're in the thick of change or reflecting on past transformations, this space is for real conversations about what it means to grow, stumble, and rise again. So get comfy, settle in, and let's get messy. Hello, fellow and future messies. Welcome back to Becoming is Messy. Every week, we explore the twists and turns and messy middles of becoming who we are meant to become. Speaking of twists and turns, as I keep learning and growing as a podcast host, I want to share something from my own messy middle. A listener reminded me recently that the imperfect level up framework was part of the secret sauce in our first episodes for the show. And they're right. While I've had incredible guests these past few months, I don't want to lose sight of the core philosophy behind Becoming is Messy, which includes the imperfect level up, a framework that I created to help us embrace our stories and fuel our becoming even when life feels chaotic. It's made up of 7 steps, each representing a competency that supports healing, growth, and authenticity. If you're new here and want a deeper dive into each step, I encourage you to go back and listen to the first 9 episodes of this podcast. That's where I really unpack the foundation of the imperfect level up. Moving forward, I plan to weave in more refreshers on these steps and invite guests whose stories and expertise reinforce each of those competencies. Today's conversation connects to our second L in level up. It's the healer. Lean into your unique healing needs. This step is all about recognizing that healing isn't one size fits all. It's about tuning into your body, honoring what it is that you need, and releasing the pressure to compare your journey to anybody else's. And there's no one better to talk us through this than today's guest, Chelsea Blackbird. Chelsea never set out to be a nutritionist, but after years of battling digestive issues, a genetic skin condition, and infertility, with no lasting solutions from doctors, she found healing through real food and faith. Within weeks, her body began to heal in ways that doctors said weren't possible. That transformation inspired her to go back to school, dive into nutrition, and eventually become the Christian nutritionist, guiding thousands of women toward energy, balance, and sustainable health. Chelsea, I'm so excited to have you here. Welcome to Becoming is Messy.
Thank you so much. I love the entire concept of this podcast.
Oh, thank you.
It resonates so much. So I'm just delighted. I can't wait to have this conversation.
Oh, yay. Thank you. I so appreciate that. And I too am excited. Help us set the stage for our conversation today and let us know just a little insights on this current season of your life. What does that look like right now?
Well, the current season of my life is that I am growing my personal business as a nutritionist, as someone who's actually teaching other health practitioners now. We have stepped into that, which has been very scary and overwhelming and messy, if you will, figuring that out. I have 3 teenagers, and that's its own whole situation.
Yes, I agree.
Right? That just keeps giving me curveballs. Yes. Years, the curveballs, they do not let up. And to be truthful and honest, we are coming through a really difficult season of grief right now in Texas. And we lost two family members to the recent floods in Central Texas and a family home. And it's been really, really tough. And so I've been having this conversation a lot with people is how do you show up to the things that you want to do and you need to do when you feel, you know, sad and overwhelmed and just incompetent and all of those things. So I've been kind of grappling with that, but that's the season that we're in right now. And I have just found that, you know, it's always something, one thing or another,
right?
And you really do have to learn how to use these kinds of tools to show up because life isn't perfect. And we have to embrace what we've got and just show up in the best way that we can.
Oh, my condolences to you and your family.
You.
Grief and loss is such a complicated one. And my heart hurts for that loss. But thank you for showing up and being here with us today. I'm always in awe of people that just find those ways that they just keep showing up and moving forward. So we honor that today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. As you've mentioned a couple of times, as you just introduced yourself a little bit, you have already referenced a few curveballs, whether it's loss or what you've been growing with your three teenagers. How about your own story? Every becoming story has some type of messy path. What are some of the twists and turns that led you to this season?
Gosh, well, my life has just been a series of twists and turns. It did not turn out anything like I thought it would. When I was a young girl, one of the very first kind of big twists of my life and decisions was, I'm a big city girl. I grew up in Houston, a huge city. I thought I was going to work in a big office building my whole life and live in the city. Well, I met a cowboy and followed him out to the country, and I moved to a really, really small town and married him. And he's a cattle rancher. I mean, I didn't even like to be outside. So one of those big, huge kind of first deviations of what I thought my path would be. And it ended up playing a really important one. In my bigger picture story, I don't feel like I'd be doing anything that I'm doing today if I hadn't moved to a place with a slower pace of life and just kind of embraced a different way of living. You know, like I didn't even have a pet growing up. And then I moved to a ranch full of animals. And that was just, it's the whole fish out of water life story. Like every funny thing you think can happen, an incompetency in that area happened. And then probably the next big thing that led me to what I do today was what you mentioned in the introduction. When I came to a roadblock when we were ready to start a family, and after a while it was not working out. And so, you know, I go to the doctor and they give me this diagnosis of quote unquote unexplained infertility, which means they have no idea what's wrong with you. And so they were ready to set me down the path of the infertility journey, as a lot of people end up taking. And I was ready to do it because all I'd ever wanted to be, it was mom. And my husband was like, no, we're not doing that. They can't tell you what's wrong with you. I don't think anything is wrong with you. And this is what he said. Well, I wanted to punch him. He said, he's like, babe, you know how sometimes it just, you know, when I turn the heifers out with the bulls in the pasture, it just takes a while.
Yeah.
He was comparing me to him.
Yes.
Are you kidding me right now? But that was a really, really tough time all the way around, like in our marriage. Mm-hmm. I just thought he was preventing us from, you know, being able to have children. But what happened was that I started seeking out answers like, okay, if we're not doing that, is there anything I can do? I started looking into anything I could do. Read a book about my body, which I hadn't done in a really long time. By this time, I'm in my early 30s. I ended up going to a naturopathic doctor who, you know, we discussed dietary changes. He gave me some supplements to kind of fill in the gaps of things that were, you know, I'd been missing. And 6 weeks later, I was pregnant. And it was amazing, of course. I was thrilled. But also, I was like, are you kidding me? I was really kind of upset with all my doctors. Nobody asked me what I've been eating. Like, why is that a big deal? Or kind of diving more into my body and my cycles and stuff like that. And so that was a huge turning point in my life that really brought me to the season. Because then I became really passionate about reading and health and went back and got a certification, which I did not plan to do anything with. I just wanted it for my own knowledge. I wanted my family and my friends to listen to me. I'm like, maybe if I get some letters behind my name, somebody will listen to me. They really don't still, but I tried with, you know, the people around you in your life tend to not listen to you as well as strangers do. And once I learned so much, I'm like, there's no way I can't share this with people, because if I could help one person like it helped me, it would be worth it. And so I stepped into this work that, you know, felt a lot of fear and incompetency and imposter syndrome and all of those things. And so, but that was really what set me on the path to what I'm doing today.
Wow, what an incredible story. We talk a lot about on this show how our purpose is often found in our wounds. And your story just so articulates that. Curious, before we dive into how you're helping others, I think we all learn from each other. While we don't compare journeys, we do take what the lessons were. I'm curious, what were some of those changes, if you don't mind sharing, when you're working with the homeopath and bringing some changes, learning about your body? Were there some key light bulbs going off in what you were learning for treating yourself?
Sure. You mean just like actually like the things I was doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, it was changing my diet. Yep. Before that, I ate a pretty standard American diet and I thought I was making, you know, decent choices. Yep. And I wouldn't say I'm the worst eater I've ever seen, but cleaned that up a little bit, went gluten-free. And I was gluten-free for 10 years.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
10 years. And I recently, this is a whole kind of another twist in my story that I had to come up with, but I recently started eating wheat again. And that was hard because it goes against a lot of the people in the holistic health space. Yeah. But anyway, I was gluten-free for 10 years. It was helpful. It's what my body needed. Yeah. My naturopath put me on some essential fatty acid supplements, which are, you know, you have to have these essential fatty acids. That's why they're called essential. And you have to get them through diet or supplementation. And those are especially those omega-3s and omega-6s. And I didn't eat a lot of fish growing up. My mom didn't like fish. And so I just was lacking. And generally lacking in nutrition, when you think about your body growing a baby, that's a really big deal. Yeah. And, you know, I just feel like my body was saying, I'm not prepared for this. I'm not ready. You know, like we don't have what we need to do this work right now. And so between that, you know, kind of filling in those gaps with nutrition and some supplementation, and then again, learning about my body, I always joke like, you know, as women, we get that early on education about our cycles and such. I mean, I didn't talk to my parents about this, my mom. I learned it at like school, you know, like in fourth grade when they have that special day, they watch those videos. Exactly. That's the last time I ever learned cycle. I read this book and it just taught me so much about my body. And once I start, you know, I took my temperature every day to see where my temperature was. I checked my cervical fluid. I did all kinds of stuff that I never thought I would do, you know, to optimize. I would do anything, you know, and it worked. Between all of those things, it all came together. And so that was a real eye opener, you know, that it just made me think of all the people in the world. And I don't want to take away from anybody else's journey. I think some people need to go down that infertility route, but that just wasn't my story. It's not what I needed. And I think a lot of people, that checkpoint is skipped, just like it was about to be for me. It's just like going right on to the next thing without like, wait a minute, let's talk about what is our body trying to tell us right now.
Oh my gosh. Right? So I so agree with that. I think to me, that's so central to your story is what you're sharing. It might not be exact for everybody, but what is the power of still knowing your own body when something doesn't really fit with what the doctors are saying. If they don't know what's causing this, how can they come up with a way to treat it? While your husband's words might have been hard at the time, I think maybe just some foresight on his part to realize that, how do you come up with the answers when you don't even know what the problem is? Really cool how you took learning about your own body. And I think to me, that's just such an important part that I don't think we're really raised to know how to do or taught how to do.
No. Not at all. I mean, we've been taught in that model, like, oh, you have a headache? Oh, go get a, you know, ibuprofen. Or you have this. Yep. Or go get, you know, instead of like, what? Wait, did I drink enough water?
Yeah.
That's why one of the hugest, you know, common root causes of a headache is just being dehydrated.
Yes.
You know, there's just so many things that have all these root causes that are, you know, a lot of them are very simple, but we're just taught to go right to some kind of pharmaceutical or, you know, not check in with ourselves.
Yeah. So what does that look like? So now bring it to the people that you now share your message with. How do you recommend people start that process to learn about themselves? What are some of the steps you recommend people take to start getting the insight of what their body needs?
Right. Well, I always like to start with the premise that your body is not against you. Mm-hmm. You know, your body is always on your side. You were created by a benevolent creator. Your body has a brilliant design. It innately knows what to do when it's given the inputs that it needs. Just to start there, because I think a lot of, like, for me, growing up with this awful skin condition, when I changed my diet to try to get pregnant, it fixed my skin condition. It fixed my digestive issues. Everything fell into place. Just knowing that when we give our body what it needs, it knows what to do. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times we are looking at our body with our dukes up. We're in a fight with it. Like, it's us against our body. And that's one of the, I think, the first things in our minds that we have to come to grips with, is that our body is on our, you can't heal like that. You can't heal if you're thinking your body is against you. So that's a big one. And then just really looking at some of these basic foundations. Are you giving your body what it needs? Do you drink enough water? I mean, these are just some of the very basic things I cover with people. Are you drinking enough water? Mm-hmm. Are you, you know, are you eating, are you getting real food, you know? And to me, it's very simple. It's just real food that God made. Can you, you know, plant it, grow it, pluck it, harvest it? All of these things, just some simple foods. Getting outside, sunshine. Are you getting outside? Are you sitting 8 hours a day at your computer and not getting out and letting the sun on your skin, getting in nature, hearing healing sounds, resting well? Just these really basics that I think deep down that we know, but we don't do.
Yes. So true. I see this so much with my teenage daughters in particular. Just this, it seems almost like an inherent shame tied to food that grows into us women. And that's feeling that it's dieting and an all or nothing approach, and you're failing if you can't get all of it correct. And so it's a stigmatized topic and a hard one, a sensitive one. So how do you talk about this topic with that in mind when you're talking with women?
Yeah, I love this, because my approach is very real food meets real life. Mm-hmm. I love cookies. I want to be able to bake cookies with my kids. I want to be able to eat birthday cake. I want to eat pie at Thanksgiving. I want to have a glass of wine with my girlfriends, right? We can't go into a way of eating that is short-sighted. Of course, there's times for therapeutic dietary measures. We might do something for a short amount of time, a sugar detox, something like that. But as a bigger picture way of lifestyle of eating, it's got to be something that's sustainable. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to build in those times of joy and joy of eating. And so the way that I teach it in my community, I have people, I always say, you know, if you eat well and give your body what it needs most of the time, it can handle some insults some of the time. And so I have my community really look at what they're eating and define what I call their heck yeahs. Like, you know, if you go into a room and there's a donut on a table and there's some cookies and you're like, you know what, I love donuts so much. Like, that's one of my favorite, quote unquote, you know, unhealthy foods to eat. It is a heck yeah for me. Great. You know, fine. If the cookies, like, that's not really your thing, then, you know, skip those. It's all about kind of looking at it through this lens of, okay, I don't have to be a perfect eater, because guess what? You're never going to be a perfect eater. Yeah. Never. You got to eat every single day for the rest of your life. If you think you're going to be a perfect eater, like, setting yourself up for a lot of disappointment, right? So how can we find this? How can we find a way to just live in this synergy of peace with our food? And I feel like when we build in these times and this grace, truly that's what it is building in those times of grace, building in for those treats that are really worth it. They're those heck yeahs. Like, I really want to have those sometimes. Then I think it just takes so much pressure off, because when you tell yourself, I can't ever have that again, what do you want more than anything?
Exactly.
You want
that. Exactly. Yeah. I'm curious, how is this conversation within your own family with teenagers? And do they have, are they starting to form kind of their own health philosophy?
It's rough.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
you know, with the teenagers, because I have a lot of control in my home and the things that I buy, but, you know, two of them are driving, and when they earn their own money and what they're out buying and eating, I'm not seeing it. And I frankly probably don't want to, but, you know, I just have to kind of let that, I've had to let that go over the years, because it hurts me, you know, because I know what it's doing to their insides. But what I'm hoping is that I have planted seeds over these years. They know my health journey. They've seen all this unfold and what I'm doing. And I think they'll come back around. But what I will say is I have a lot of people in my community that, you know, they've already got kids that are out of the house and they feel so defeated. Like, I missed it. Yeah, I missed the window. Yeah. I'm getting myself together. But what's beautiful is that as they are, you know, I always tell moms, especially, I'm like, you got to work on yourself first. I mean, get yourself right. And it's what's beautiful is just this kind of organic evangelical, but just by doing, you know, where you don't have to talk about all the time. Just let your family see that you feel better, that you're not as snappy with them, that you have more patience, that you're calmer. Right. And then when we do that, then your family starts paying attention to that. And that is what I have seen in my community is once these moms have started doing that, then their families see those changes and they'll start getting on board. Even their children that are grown their way, but when they come back or talk to their parents, they're making changes. And it is so beautiful. And I have certain people in my community, I'm like, okay, I'm going to use you an example again, because this is like every mom's like, you know, feels like they missed this boat, and you haven't. It is never too late.
Oh, you're so right. That we just dropped our oldest off at college. And so he's in Boston and we're here in Madison. And I think every aspect of life right now is, did we do enough for our part, right? Whether it's the choices he's making with friends, whether it's how he handles school, whether it's just his mental well-being, and then also what his nutrition ends up looking. And setting them out. But I think we're just so hopeful that setting that loving foundation and setting some model examples, like over time, it might not show up right away, but I guess we have faith that we did our part and loved the best we could.
Right. I went off to college. I had one that went to boarding school for a year. He came back, but both of them, their boys, were like, oh God, I missed your food.
Yeah.
They did not appreciate it until they went away. And then all they had was dorm food or food served no choice. And they didn't feel as well. They could really tell. I have seen them start to adjust on their own because of that experience.
Yes.
But they had to feel kind of yucky and dive into whatever they were doing at that time. Right. You know, with them, the teenagers I have at home, kids are a little bit more resilient. Their bodies still have some resilient mitochondria. And so they get away with a little bit more than we can, right? But they can tell when they don't feel well. And we have some things in place, like they know if they have a headache, I'm going to say, did you drink water? Did you try your electrolytes? There's things we're going to do first. And so just those lessons that, you know, go take an Epsom salt bath. These are just things that are kind of ingrained in them. Like, let's try these things first. But I think they come back around to those seeds that you plant in any of those areas that you talked about.
I read how much faith is such a central part of your work. How do you see the connection between spiritual health and physical health?
And so many levels. The very first thing, really, going into nutrition and like, how am I going to explain this to people? Because there's so much conflicting advice out there, right? I mean, that's part of it's so frustrating. And then you can find a study that says one thing and then find one that says the exact opposite. And so for me, it made just so much sense to, you know, I'm Christian, and to like look in the Bible and be like, okay, well, the creator of our body, what did he make for us to eat? Well, it tells us right there in Genesis 1:29, it says he made plants. Genesis 9:3, eat meat, which is a controversial for a lot of people, but it's very specific in the Bible. You know, he talks about eating red meat. He's real specific. So like, to me, I'm just like, okay, well, that makes sense. All right, check. I don't have to question that. I'm like, I don't have to question this, you know, about what kind of diet. I'm going to include those things. So just at a dietary level, it was that. But mind work, you know, scripture calls us to renew our minds. It tells us that our thoughts run our life. To me, you don't do anything in your physical body. You don't pick up a yogurt. You don't walk out the door to go exercise until your mind has told you to. You got to work on those thoughts, work where your mind is, to really accomplish anything in the physical. And then, you know, even the level above that is, you know, what is driving you? What is your bigger picture of why you want to be healthy? You know, when we can look beyond the scale weight or the size of your genes, you know, it's more about how do I want to show up? You know, like I feel like everybody here is called with a purpose and special gifts and the way they're meant to bless the world. And not feeling good in your body just prevents you from showing, it makes you fly under the radar and not stepping into living into everything that you were created to be. And so that's really where my motivation comes in to help people, is because I feel like we need all hands on deck, everybody with their gifts, doing what they were supposed to do in this world, right? And I feel like when we eat well, we feel well, and we serve well. And that is our true purpose, is just to show up and serve in our purpose and serve our communities and our families and the people in our lives well. And we do that so much better when we feel good in our body and about our body.
Yeah. See, I love that you've found the framework for you that makes sense and that where you can turn to in the Bible to show you those foods. For me, that spiritual physical connection is truly just my spiritual well-being, my energy level. Like I bring it down.
Yeah.
Like I've always, every day I want my vibration to be as highest, the highest it possibly yeah. can. And I want to feel my best. And that's really over the years has been learning what foods energize me and what foods mm-hmm. don't. And yes. like you talking about donuts earlier, donuts are my favorite and I will have one once in a while. However, yeah. they really do make me feel awful. Doesn't
yeah.
feel good. So it's okay as a treat, but for me, it just doesn't feel good. I'm not going to eat it all the time, where there's other foods that energize me, make me feel good. And so just that vibration has helped me release a little yeah. of the shame of food. Specifics yeah. of what foods just simply feel good.
Right.
That.
Yeah. And, you know, that is going to be different for each person.
Totally. Yes.
Right. I mean, I don't think donuts make anybody like feel good.
Right. Yeah. But they don't make them feel sick.
Maybe not make you feel sick, you know, and sometimes we need a little grace around it. So we're not like, you know, eat a donut and then beat ourselves up for three days.
No,
right?
No.
It really brings down your frequency for sure. But you're so right. There are people that might be a better plant. Heavy diet. And that's just, you're going to feel that in your body.
Yes,
you're so
right.
Even the people around you, like, do they increase your vibration, increase your frequency? Are they, you know, all of those things? Yeah. It's something that when we kind of dive deeper over the years, the things that I have taught have evolved, not just from food, but also to this and the way that we think and the way that we feel, the words we speak to each other, they change the vibration of ourselves. They change the frequency of ourselves. And so we have to be so mindful of that because it's not just about what you eat. You know, there's a whole bigger framework and picture,
yes.
but it's all these other things.
So I feel like so much of what you're talking about is not about any one thing, but it's truly what you need
mm-hmm.
to be the best version of you. When
yes,
you think of it,
right.
it just is a way to remove some of the hardness of it because you're really truly
mm-hmm.
trying to do what's best for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to hear a little bit more about your Feast to Fast program and what makes it different and why is that one of the starting points?
That was my first program that I created, and that was really born out of a lot of people coming to me wanting to lose weight.
Yes.
And I was saying the same thing over and over in my consultations. I'm like, this is not efficient. I'm like, how can I reach more people at one time?
Yes.
So I created this program. A lot of it is what we've talked about. Sometimes we feast and sometimes we fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the nature. It is the rhythm of our lives. Whether we're looking historically, sometimes there were times where food was a little less available and there were times when food was more abundant. Mm-hmm. In our modern times, we have all the food available all the time, which I call a blessing and a curse
yep.
because
oh,
it's disconnected us from nature and seasonal eating and local eating and all of these things, which I find are very important because also speaking of frequencies and vibrations, our food is very sensitive to where it is grown. And our body, I always talk about the way our bodies work in relation to creation. And we pick up that energy from the food that we're eating. Does it match what our outer environment is telling us? Well, if there's a mismatch, that's a problem. But what Feast to Fast really drives home for people is teaching this grace that, you know, sometimes we feast, sometimes we fast, sometimes we blow it out. We have a fun, you know, those heck yeahs. We're going to eat some of those heck yeahs. But most of the time, we're going to honor our bodies with the foods that it needs. And it doesn't mean we're bad if we go off the rails a day and we, you know, have birthday cake. And that doesn't mean that you failed and that you should just throw in the towel for the rest of the week. We come back in, you know, and just give our body what it needs and just follow this rhythm. And so it's teaching this rhythm to people. And because it takes a while, it takes a while to let go of that shame and that guilt and I'm doing it wrong and I have to eat perfect. And so we teach about blood sugar regulation, the right foods to eat and that kind of thing. But then after Feast to Fast, you know, after so many years of teaching that, I did realize like it's not just about food. And so I have another program. It's called the Genesis Prescription. And it's about the way that our bodies do relate to the rest of creation. You need sunshine. you need water. You need to be connected to the earth. Talk about your vibration and, you know, earthing and picking up electrons and feeling where you are in time and space, letting your body feel safe, right? The plant foods, the animal foods, breathing through your nose, that calm breathing through your nose, getting enough rest, movement, fellowship. These are all the pillars of all the ways that we need to be healthy. And so that's, I really love teaching that bigger picture now and then kind of morphed into teaching other practitioners how to teach that framework. And so now a lot of the work that I do, because I have a lot of people coming to me over the years, like, where did you learn to, you know, as a Christian, you know, how did you get that, weave that all together? And I was like, well, that, you know, that was divinely inspired. Yeah, sure, yeah. And so I can't take you to a school for that, but ended up creating one. And just to kind of come back around to what you do and talking about being messy, and at each step of this journey, I, even though I'm a Christian, when I felt called to do these things, I'd be like, no, no, God, I am not doing this. I am not, I do not know enough. I am not worthy enough. And this is very out there and bold. And I am not really bold in my faith. Frankly, I'm not evangelical like that. And you're asking me to step out and be really bold in this story. And it's been, I joke that I've been uncomfortable for like 13 years.
Oh gosh, right? You know, I always say, like, I'm more spiritual than, so not necessarily Christian, but in my spirituality, I similarly feel that call. I call it universe. And I, you know, but yeah. I similar, that universe nudge and calling. And I always say, why are the deepest callings? It's never easy. It's never easy and simple and light. It's some of the hardest decisions I have to make. And when I ignore it, I've told many stories on this show. When I ignore it, yet my health suffers, my energy suffers. You know, it just is a spiral. I always love the Maya Angelou quote, the universe speaks to you in whispers, and then it gets louder and louder. Yes. Oprah added that it hits you over the head.
Right.
Eventually, you are going to answer it. Eventually.
Yes. Whether that is, you know, we can take it back to the body too.
Yeah.
You know, your body will give you this little like, I don't feel good. I have a little headache.
Yes.
And if you ignore that, it's going to be a big old sledgehammer over your head.
Yes.
If you
don't.
If you can't put a piece of tape over your change oil light and think your car is going to be fine,
right?
Like, we got to address the issue. So whether it is something maybe our body's telling us, whether it's something that we're feeling called to that feels really scary and out of our comfort zone, I think those are the things that make us grow. And they are messy to step into, and they're not perfect, but that's how you grow. And that's really what so much of this journey is about, right?
So how did you, I read that taking on the public role of the Christian nutritionist title was something that brought you some fear. So when you are in that, what does overcoming that fear and leaning into a calling, what does that look like for you?
It has been amazing. It has come with so many blessings. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad I stepped into it. I was extremely resistant. I was like, no, I am not doing this. But it was like the sledgehammer over the head. Like, it would not leave my brain. It would not go away. And I was like, fine, I will do it. And so I just started putting myself out there. That was scary. That's what the scary thing was, is putting yourself out there. And I'm like, this is going to come to left field to my family and friends. We're going to be like, what? What happened? Because it was just very kind of out of my nature to step out and be so open about it. And so it's been challenging, but again, it's come with so many blessings. I think when you do step into what you are called to do and using your gifts in those ways, like, the blessings come, because I've just had doors open. I've gotten to meet so many interesting people, had some really neat opportunities. It's just been so cool. Like, I could have never imagined this path for myself. Like, kind of coming back around to the beginning, like, I thought I was going to work in an office all my life, right? Like, I went to college. I don't use any of my college degrees. I don't use any of that.
Yes.
I do today, right? I didn't even know what a nutritionist was when I was growing up. I couldn't even have conceived of what I'm doing. So to live where I live, to be married to the person I'm married to do the work that I do, it has just been truly stepping into it, feeling very unsure, but it has blessed me beyond measure. And so that's so much of why I like to tell the stories, because I think we're afraid to step into these callings. But on the other side of that, you get past that initial uncomfortableness is such blessing.
Yes, and I just hear that, just the passion comes out in your voice. Talk about energy, like, you're just so energized talking about this. And just sharing the blessings in your life. And I think that's so important to me. I always think that the harder the decision, the harder you feel pushed, the potential for so much greatness to match that is on the other side. It's sticking and trusting yourself, and it takes some stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah. And I think that's, you brought up a good point. I think trusting yourself, that's probably something in my journey that I, maybe the biggest lesson that I've had to learn over these is to trust myself. And, you know, for me, definitely lean into what I'm being called to do by the Lord, but also just trusting, like if I'm called to it, then there's a reason, right?
Yes.
And so to trust that, and that's a hard thing.
Yes,
that's a hard thing,
isn't it? Don't you find like sometimes those callings, like when they do come as whispers, you don't know the why yet. It's like you get this little whisper and it's the first next step. And then it's like you get this little whisper and that's the next step. And you don't, I rarely know the end to those callings. I don't always know where they're leading.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a good thing because I think if, you know, if we saw the whole big plan at once, it would be the ever-living pants office and we'd never do any of it.
That's so true.
Like, you know, right? Yes. Like, I could see now what I'm doing now. If I could just like, you're going to do this and then and it's going to lead to this. And I'm like, absolutely not.
It sounds so scary.
Right? I mean, that's like being at the bottom of the stairs and trying to get to the top of the stairs in one leap. That's overwhelming. But when we do get that... Was that Martin Luther King or who said you get that spotlight on one step at a time, just enough in the road to see what's right ahead of you? And I think that's for our protection.
Definitely.
So that we'll
keep moving. So just what role do you think community plays in making lasting health changes?
Oh, it's critical. I have found that. So I love working in groups. So that's what I've really moved to is working in groups. And I have a group, it's called the Christian Health Club. It's just a place where you can come and have accountability, support, encouragement. You know, I think we all need that. We need somebody to be a cheerleader. We need somebody to hold us accountable. We need somebody to talk us off the ledge, not let us give up, you know, all of these things. And if you're just trying to do it in isolation, it is 10 times harder. It is absolutely 10 times harder. And you will also find when you're in community, that somebody has experienced exactly what you've experienced, you know, in your feelings, or maybe even in a specific health challenge or condition. And just to have people as an example is like, yeah, you can get through it. It's so helpful. I can't talk about fellowship and community enough. It is, again, goes back to those, you know, all those pillars. It's a critical one.
All right. So this next session is called Rapid Reel. Just a few questions to get to know you a little bit more. Thing to overthink. To start your morning, are you a coffee, tea, or something else to kick off your day?
Oh, coffee. But water before coffee, everybody.
Oh,
I always tell people,
okay,
you gotta have water before coffee. We're really dehydrated when we wake up. You don't want to splash your body with a bunch of acidic coffee. You need some water to restore that hydration and then have your
coffee. Good. But I don't know if I've ever specifically heard it. So yes, thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
What is a favorite comfort food that you like to make for your fam? Enjoy yourself.
Yes, I do love me a warm chocolate chip cookie out of the oven.
Yes.
You know, and it's like one of those things, not to elaborate, to go back though to what we're talking about. Like, I don't, Chips Ahoy, like that doesn't tempt me at all.
Same. Yeah.
I gotta be homemade.
Like
those packaged ones are not worth it for me.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to eat
those. Same.
I'm
gonna make them. Yeah, it has to be worth it. Oven is really hard to guess.
Yes.
You mentioned earlier, you know, that books have played a big part in your own learning journey when it comes to recognizing what your body needs. Is there a book or two that you would recommend for people just getting started to learn more about themselves?
Well, gosh, okay. I'm trying to think of one that would be really just a good overall general one. And of course, I'm going completely blank because I have so many books in my head. Oh, I know. Okay. Deep Nutrition by Dr. Kate Shanahan.
Okay.
That's a really good one. That's when we have our students read in our school. And I think that covers nutrition and health very, very well.
Oh, good. I haven't heard of that one. Add that to my reading list.
Yeah, it's a good one.
What is an example of a stress reliever for you other than food? What's your way of winding down after a stressful day?
Well, I will tell you, it's really starting my day. I go on a walk every single day outside. And if I don't do that, I mean, that's my movement. I've never been a runner. I don't like to run.
Yeah.
I'm a walker and I love walking.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's the stress reliever. It sets my tone for my day. And so that is a critical part of my day.
All right. This next, just a phrase of what your philosophy is on health.
On health. Eat real food the way God made it.
Thank you for sharing so much of your wisdom and story today. Before we wrap up with our closing question, is there anything else on your heart that we didn't touch on? And then also, how can people connect with you?
Let's see. I think we touched on everything. I really wanted to leave the listener with the fact that please know that your body is always on your side and just be listening for those cues, right? Don't let it come to the sledgehammer. And yes, connect with me. I'm the Christian Nutritionist everywhere on Instagram, on Facebook. My website's The Christian Nutritionist. I have the Christian Health Club podcast. And so any of those places would be great.
Awesome. And we will share those when we post the podcast as well. So right now, some of our listeners are in their own messy middle. What advice do you wish someone had given you a little bit sooner when you found yourself in that place?
To not be afraid of B-minus work.
That's a good one.
Apple Podcast is like the B-minus approach to weight loss. Yeah. Because again, like, just think if you didn't think you had to be an A-plus in whatever you're doing in your life, right? Weight loss. If you didn't always hold yourself, I got to be an A-plus every day. You don't be an A or an F. Be okay with a B-minus.
I love
that.
Show
up. And like, you can be a B-minus. Accomplish a lot.
Oh my gosh. I relate to that so much. I feel like I was an A-plus most of my life. And I feel like the last probably 5 years, I'm accepting B-minus feels really good. It's just you can't be perfect in every area of your life and just chilling out a little bit feels so good and letting go of some of that pressure on yourself.
Yeah. And that is the way that I've been able to show up in those messy moments of life is just like, you know, the best I can come up with right now and be a B-minus, but it's going to be okay.
Thank you so much for being here. This conversation beautifully illustrated what leaning into your unique healing needs is all about, slowing down to listen to your own body and trust your inner wisdom to give it what it needs. When we create that kind of partnership with ourselves, healing becomes less about fixing and more about supporting the wholeness that's already there. Thank Messies for tuning in. Be sure to join me next week as we keep exploring the messy middle of becoming one story, one lesson, and one level up story at a time.
Before we wrap today, I want to invite you to be part of the Becoming is Messy community. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And if there's anything that resonates with you, please leave a review. Your feedback means the world to me, and it helps other people find this community. Follow me on social media. I'd love to hear your ideas for future topics, your questions, and stories from your own messy moments. And if you're feeling inspired, check out the Becoming is Messy shop, where you can grab a mug, a t-shirt, or something else that reminds you to embrace your messy magic every single day. A huge thank you to the incredible Wolves and Sheep for providing the music for Becoming is Messy. Check them out on your favorite music streaming platform. As we close out today's episode, remember this. Messy is just another word for growing. So keep showing up, keep laughing, and keep making beautifully awkward progress. Until next time, stay messy, my friends.